So as we get closer to Pesach, we have Poches Vaholech, I understand. I get it. The wives are need their husbands more.
Married yet anticipate that this is going to be the situation.
Right, this is the chinuch,
the star of the evening. Right. It's like a school.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to correct, for some reason I misspoke. When the Malbim said, remember the Malbim under the famous fort, which I have a kasha under the Malbim's famous fort, that Rav Yehuda's differentiation of Datsach, Adash, Ba'achav is because each group of three was designed to teach a separate lesson. So based on the lesson of the Psukim. So Datsach is Ani Hashem, that there is a God, Metzias Hashem. Adash is Ani Hashem Bekeref Haaretz, that Hashem is Mashkiach and involved in the world. Those two I said. The third one is Ein Kamoni B'chol Haaretz. God's omnipotence, he is more powerful than any other Koach. So based on these Lashonos, the Malbim says, the primary lesson of the first group is that God exists. The primary lesson of the second group is that he is involved in the Maisim of Bnei Adam. And the third group is, he is omnipotent and no one can defeat him. Again, my kasha is, you know, why don't you see that in every Makkah? But be it as it may, the Malbim's Diyuk is based on the Lashon of the Psukim. I just want to add, he also says that this explains the idea why the first two Makos in each sequence require an advance warning and the third one not, because he says like this. He says, the Torah says everything is established al pi shnayim edim. So the first two times they didn't have an Edus against them. They needed warning. But once the Yesod is established through Edus, if you ignore the Edus, you could be nanash without a hasra. Right? That's how the Malbim understands the pattern of Datsach, Adash, Biachas. Okay, so today we're going to start with really what the Haggadah itself says is the most important part of the mitzvah of Magid. And this is actually a Mishnah, right? So every part of the Haggadah Kemat, you can trace it to a source in Chazal. And the source in Chazal of Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer is a Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim, which says, Rabban Gamliel used to say, Kol Shalai Amar Shalai Shadvar Malalu B'Pesach, anybody that does not explain these three mitzvos for the Seder of Pesach, Lo Yatza Yidei Chavaso, has not fulfilled his obligation. And the three mitzvahs are Pesach, the Korban Pesach, Matzah, the eating of Matzah, and Maror, the eating of the bitter herb. Now, there are at least two questions regarding the meaning of this statement. Anyone that does not explain these three things is not Yotze his mitzvah. What mitzvah is it that he's not Yotze? So the Marsha actually says, he's actually not Yotze Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, right? There's a mitzvah to eat the Korban Pesach. There's a mitzvah to eat Matzah. There's a mitzvah to eat Maror. Zok de Marsha, if you eat the Matzah without explaining its significance, now it doesn't just mean without understanding it. There has to be a verbalization. You're not Yotze. And the Marsha asks the Kasha, basically, if that's the case, why is it different than any other mitzvah? We don't find, I'm not Yotze Shofar unless I verbalize its significance. I'm not Yotze Lulav, I'm not Yotze Tfilin. That would be a very unique thing, that you're not Yotze a physical mitzvah of eating something unless you explain the significance. But according to the Marsha at least, that's the Chiddush. But the Pashtus of the Mishnah is not like the Marsha. That when it says you're not Yotze the mitzvah, it does not mean you're not Yotze Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, you are Yotze, but you're not Yotze the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. That is what Rav Chaim says Beferish, if you remember, when Rav Chaim discussed the difference between the mitzvah of Zechira, remembrance, the entire year, and the special mitzvah of Sipur, Leil Pesach. He focuses on, Rabban Gamliel, that for the mitzvah of Sipur, you have to be Masbir, Pesach, Matzah, and Mora. You see the difference here. In other words, it's not a chisaron in the mitzvah of Pesach, Matzah, and Mora. I'm Yotzei Matzah even if I don't explain it. I'm Yotzei Moror even if I don't explain it. I'm Yotzei Pesach even if I don't explain it. What I'm not Yotzei is I'm not Yotzei Haggadah, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now because of this, this is an extremely important part of the Seder. I think I mentioned to you that since this is towards the end of Maggid, so the women or the men, if they're taking care of the food, men might do it too, will tend to go into the kitchen and start getting stuff. So the problem is they bedafka walk out during these paragraphs, which is a big waste because that means, you know, they don't have the mitzvah of Haggadah. So if somebody is going to get up bedafka during these paragraphs, they have to be very, very careful to either read ahead, which you're allowed to do, read ahead in Hebrew or English, because again, the Haggadah Bichlal can and should be recited in a language you understand, Hebrew, English, Ladino, whatever, Yiddish, whatever your language is, or at a minimum, after they come back from the kitchen, before the second cup, they should say it. Okay, this cannot be skipped. As I mentioned, there are portions of the Haggadah which, if you skipped it, you don't have to make up. But this absolutely has to be said. Now, there is a Das Yochid of the Ran, where the Ran says, and the words Lo Yotza Yedei Chovaso doesn't mean you're not Yotze at all, but it means you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah in the best possible way. So according to the Ran, it's mashma, you are Yotzei the mitzvah. And of course, the Rishayim from the Rashba and the Rif, you have to say that as well. If you remember, I mentioned to you that they asked the Kasha, why don't you recite a bracha on the Haggadah? So the Rashba and the Rif say, because you're Yotzei with one sentence. Aye, how can you be Yotzei with one sentence? What about Pesach, Matzah, and Mar? So it must be, by Hechrich, they learned like the Ran, or the Ran learned like them, that Lo Yotzei Dei Chovasai is not b'di'evit, it's only l'chatchila. But still, to play it safe, it is a mitzvah d'oraisa, one should take this very, very seriously. You have to explain the Pesach, the Matzah, and the Moror. So,
what else is essential? This is essential.
Yeah.
We have, what else essential?
Well, Maskil Beginus Masayim Bishvach, so the drasha of Arami Oved Avi is also essential. So Arami Oved Avi and Rabban Gamliel are the two parts of the Haggadah that you have to do. Now, Hallel is also essential, but Hallel, not because of the mitzvah of Sibri Yitzias Mitzrayim, there's a separate Takonas Chachamim that we have to recite Hallel Leil Seder. It's not Haggadah, but it is a mitzvah of Hallel. Hallel is a Chi of Gomor. This is an important thing to know, by the way. We'll talk about it. We're not up to there quite yet. But, you know, maybe among people who are less knowledgeable, some people sometimes leave the Seder after benching. They just leave the Seder after benching. And that is a bad thing to do, unless someone's sick, for two reasons. Number one, if they leave after benching, they're going to miss the mitzvah of the fourth kos. There is another kos, which is a chiyuv rabbanan. But number two, which is maybe even more important, is they're going to miss the completion of the mitzvah of Hallel. Now, once Hallel and the fourth cup has been drunk, you can leave for Chagadja and those other things. Although they have a beautiful, beautiful importance. I hope I'll get to it maybe tomorrow, be the last year. Those are very important things, but they're not essential, though those are all. The general rule is, it's almost a perverse rule. Whatever parts you like to say the most are the ones you can skip. And the parts you don't like to say the most are the ones you have to say, right? So it's kind of that. You know, if people would make up their own Seder, they would Bedafka put in Chagadja and the four sons. But those are the things, Bedafka, that if you had to skip, you're allowed to skip.
What about that's Maskil?
Yeah, yeah. So the fulfillment, yeah. So you have to say the sentence. Avodim hayinu l'paro l'mitzrayim v'yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu misham b'yad chazaka v'zroi netuya. That one sentence you have to say, and you have to say mitchila ovdei avodah zarah yavaseinu v'achshav kiravnu hamakom l'avodasa. So those are two sentences which are called the maskil b'nis m'sayim mitzrayim. You don't have to say the middle stuff, and you have to say the manishtana, because there has to be a question and an answer. So therefore, in order, what you have to say is, you have to say Kiddush. this is, let's go with the bare bones minimum Haggadah, the absolute bare bones minimum to be Yotze. You have to say Kiddush, okay? After Kiddush, you say the Manishtana. After the Manishtana, you say one sentence, Avodim Hayinu L'Parav Mitzrayim V'Yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham B'Yad Chazaka Zroi Netuya. The next sentence you say is Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. Right, so there's a lot that you skipped already, and then you do have to say all of the drushas of Arami Ovid Avi and Rabban Gamliel, and that is a minimal magid to be Yotze the mitzvah.
Yeah. What about the Esrei Makos?
Well, the Esrei Makos are nich. In other words, since you said Arami Ovid Avi, so the Esrei Makos, the recitation is nichlal in the. That's the tail end. Yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham. Biyat Chazak, and then you say Eilu Esrei Makos, right? Eilu Esrei. So Dayenu, again, I'm not suggesting you skip this.
Made up was only the first night.
Huh?
If someone was in August in the hospital,
yeah,
and doesn't do the first night,
yeah,
do they do this the second night?
Are you talking about in Chutz Laretz or here?
Even or let's say a third night. I'm saying, yeah, someone
who's
in
August. No, there's no. You can't make it up. It's a one-time mitzvah.
You should at the bare minimum try to do this.
Yes. So this is the absolute minimum that you need. It could also be that if you just recited the four verses of Arami Ovid Avi, even without the drushas, you might be Yotze. Meaning, just recite Arami Ovid Avi, because that is Yetzias Mitzrayim in four psukim. So there is a lot that can be skipped, but avada, if a person is able, of course, you say everything. Now, even this minimal Haggadah doesn't pater you from Hallel. If you really have to say Hallel, eat matzah, you know, those things you still have to. You have to do. Okay. So now we have the three things here. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. The main thing I'm going to talk about is Matzah, but let me just say a few words about the Pesach and the Maror. Then we'll talk about the Matzah, which is the most complicated and difficult part of this passage. The Pesach, right? Pesach, here the English translation is a very good Passover. Very, very excellent. Because what happened was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu passed over the houses of Klal Yisrael because of the Dam Pesach. Now it's interesting. You might ask a very simple question here. Hashem decreed Chatzos Laila, midnight, the firstborn of Mitzrayim are going to die. But Hashem gives us a special chesed that I will pass over the houses of the Yidden that were Moser Nefesh. Remember, you have to remember the context. Shechting the Korban Pesach and putting the blood on the in a very open place on the two mezuzos, the two doorposts, and on top of the mashkov, was an act of tremendous courage and mesiras nefesh and devotion to God. Remember that the lamb was the god of Mitzrayim, and to kill, desecrate the lamb was like a blasphemous act that would have invited violence and retribution and destruction. And in many ways, the Makas Bechoros was the Sechus of Am Yisrael being Moser Nefesh. So Hashem says, because of your Mesiris Nefesh, I will pass over your homes. Now, the question you could ask is very simple. Why did the Bechorei Yisrael need a special act of divine mercy? Hashem's decree was to kill the firstborn of Egypt. So if I'm not an Egyptian, I'm automatically saved. It's mashma, in other words, had it not been for the special Mesiras Nefesh of Dam Pesach, the Bechorei Yisrael would have died. Why is that so? So one interpretation, as I think I already told you, that it doesn't mean the Bechorei Yisrael would have died. I mean, God's agenda was only to kill the firstborn of Egypt. But the Malach HaMaves had his regular rounds that night as well. So the Dam Pesach created the Shimor, the protection, where the Malach HaMaves didn't enter the houses of the Jewish people. So it's not the pshat that the firstborn were saved because of the Korban Pesach. The pshat is whoever was scheduled to die was saved because of the Korban Pesach. Now that's a good teres, but it's not mashma from the Torah itself that way. Because the Torah says that the firstborn of every family is sanctified and needs a pidyon haben because they were spared in a miraculous way by God passing over the houses of the Jews. In other words, that is the source of the kedusha of a bechor, But if you're going to tell me, no, they didn't need any particular miracle, they just were not included in Hashem's decree, then why would they be sanctified, as it were? So the Netziv says the following. The Netziv has an idea that's a little complicated, and that is, what really killed, this is what he says, what really killed the Bechorei Mitzrayim was not that Hashem had a sword, so to speak, and killed them, but he simply revealed his Shekhinah. And when a person experiences Gilui Shekhinah and is not deserving of it, they automatically die. They die. Just as Hashem told Moshe, Lo Yirani Adam B'chai, no one can gaze at me, whatever that would mean, and live. So what killed the Bechor was the Gilui Shekhinah. And the concept is, a Bechor is said to come from a very holy place. Every Bechor has a certain capacity to connect to God. So when Hashem is Megala Shekhinah, every single Bechor would be most likely to experience Gilui Shekhinah. And the miracle was that the Jewish Bechorim, who experienced the same Gilui Shekhinah as the Egyptian Bechorim, didn't die. And that was in the merit of the Mesiras Nefesh of the Korban Pesach.
That would suggest, though, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was going to the houses despite having...
Yes, in other words, what happened was Hashem revealed his presence to all of the firstborn, Jew and non-Jew. But through the zechus of the Korban Pesach, the Jewish Bechorim were not affected. So therefore, there was a very unusual night for them. The Bechor experienced the Gilui Shekhinah and was not damaged. Yeah.
So there's a question of Hosha. Theo says that it was the same thing. It was a Gilui Shekhinah. Therefore, that's why forfeits died. So according to that, they shouldn't have died by, because they were already holding.
I mean, the one fifth that that survived. Well, again, you know, the problem is that Hashem is infinite, so the Giluyim of Shekhinah can be on infinite level. So the fact that you're able to live with level one is not going to mean you can live at level two. You see, so level two already is going to be toxic, so to speak, and you won't be able to live. Yeah.
How do we understand this Egyptian, which were first born, but they were traveling abroad, they also been killed, and also those foreigners, which was
the what?
First
the
foreigners.
The, yes.
Also, first born was killed in Egypt.
Yes. Well, again, why? Well, once again, if the Shekhinah appears to them, and even in Egypt, it could appear in other lands as well. Meaning, Hashem is everywhere, but Hashem covers himself up. We don't have a sense of the Shekhinah because that would overwhelm us, that would destroy us. So all Hashem has to do is show something of himself, and that is enough to destroy us. And that happened in every country if there were Egyptian firstborn, and that happened to everybody in Mitzrayim. The Netziv's Chiddush is that the Gilui Shekhinah was even to the Jewish firstborn, and the Dam Pesach was that which was matzil them. Now, Pesach, of course, is the one mitzvah we don't have today because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, and the zecher of the Pesach, the remembrance of the Pesach, is the roasted meat that is on the Seder plate. And although you are allowed to eat that roasted meat during the day of Yom Tov, but you do not eat it at night because we have a minhag that we don't eat roasted meat at night, so people shouldn't think it is a Korban Pesach. And because of this, unlike the matzah and the maror, that when you recite the Rabban Gamliel paragraph, you either point to it or you lift it up, when you say Pesach, Pesach, you do not point to the zeruah, point to the meat, or lift it up. It's for the same reason that people should not think that you are bringing a Korban Pesach, because once again, it's an Avera actually. If you were to bring a Korban, any Korban, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you're Chai of Kares. This is one of the Averas in the Torah of slaughtering, bringing a Korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash.
So then now that pasuk on the angel of death, that's now shver with this teretz, isn't it?
So the Netziv explains it this way. We don't really know exactly the process. He says that Hashem has like an honor guard with him. That's the concept. Those are called the angels of destruction. And whenever Hashem reveals his presence, the mechablim come in. So in fact, that's how he answers the contradiction. He says, it's not that Hashem killed. He says, Hashem did not directly kill the mechablim. Hashem is megale the Shechina, and then the mechablim come. And that's the process. So Hashem did it in the sense that the Siba for their death was the revelation of the Shechina, but the actual execution was done by the Malach Mavs. That's actually how the Netziv learns it. He says that the king, the Malko Shel Olam, has an honor guard, that when you see too much, they come in and they're mechabel. Yeah.
What does that mean?
When you mechabel is destroy mechabel, they destroy. Yeah.
I believe that a couple of years ago, Rav said that there's a difference between the Hore, the boys,
yeah,
and the Hore of the women.
Yeah.
And then the Nes was the women. The men's Hore were not killed. But I don't remember who said it.
Yeah, this is a vort in the name of Rabbi Kiv Eger, so there's a very, very esteemed lineage. Rabbi Kiv Eger wants to answer the question, did Hashem do the plague of the firstborn, or did the Malach HaMavet? Because one pasuk says Hashem did it, the other pasuk says Hamashchis, the angel of destruction. So the Netziv, you know, learned the way he learns. But they say b'shem Rabbi Kiv Eger, a tremendous teretz, Rabbi Kiv Eger says there's a difference between a firstborn from a father and a firstborn of a mother when the father had many children. That is, in a promiscuous society, you can always know who the mother is. But at least before there was DNA testing, you can never know who the father is, because any woman would be mezana with a lot of people. So Rabbi Kiv Eger teretz, therefore, a child who was the firstborn of his mother, that could be given to the angels, because the angels could know that. But a child that was a firstborn of the father, that wasn't the mother's firstborn, only Hashem would know. So Rabbi Kiv Eger says, the Bechor Me'av was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bechor Me'aim was the Malach HaMavet, and that is why you only need a Pidyon HaBen for a Bechor Me'aim, because it's the Bechor Me'aim that a miracle was needed, because once the Malach HaMavet comes in, Malach HaMavet can kill everybody, so that was a special miracle. If Hashem is handling it, it's no miracle. Hashem just chooses who he goes after. And therefore, Kiv Eger says, that's why Pidyon HaBen is only a Bechor Me'aim and not a Bechor Me'av. Ah, you'll ask me, so why is the fast of the firstborn even a Bechor Me'av? Because, all right, so again, so some learn that the fast of the firstborn has nothing to do with Makas Bechoros. Shlomo Zalman says an interesting thing, that originally the service in the Beis HaMikdash should have been done by the Bechor. But because of the Cheid HaEgel, it went to Kohanim. So every Bechor has a pain in his heart that I can't do the Avaida. So what day of the year would that pain be most acute? It would be Erev Pesach, which was the largest number of korbanos the whole year. So the Tainus Bechayrim, Rav Shlomo Zalman wants to say, has nothing, it's a big, big chiddush, I mean, has nothing to do with the plague of the firstborn. It has to do with the tsar that a Bechor is no longer zochet to do the Avaida, and that's a Bechor Me'av and a Bechor Me'ayim, both of them. But that teretz that you said, that you remembered, Baruch Hashem, it's always, you know, when people remember Shir, so it's good and bad. It's good that Baruch Hashem people remember. It's bad. It's harder to repeat. there's sometimes you don't always want people to remember. But okay, this is b'shem Rabbi Kiv Eger. Rabbi Kiv Eger says this. Okay, alrighty. Now the Netziv points out the following. What is the eternal lesson of Pesach, passing over? Meaning, even though a Jewish Bechor, had the same Gilui Shechina as the Egyptian Bechor, and they both should have died, but Hashem discriminates, so to speak. Poseach. So Rabbi Kiv Eger says, this was an extremely important lesson in Eretz Yisrael B'davka. Because we know in Eretz Yisrael, right, all the other countries are run through Malachim, are run through assistant secretaries of state. Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes direct control. And in Eretz Yisrael, we see an amazing thing. You can, and even today we see it. You can have two farmers, one next to the other, and one farmer keeps the mitzvos of Shemitah, and Hashem blesses him in the sixth year with a double or triple harvest. And the other farmer figures he doesn't want to lose out, and his crop is stricken, doesn't keep Shemitah, and his crop is stricken with disease and the like. And the farmer might say ahead of time, I can't believe this stuff. You're telling me two people, one next to the other, one guy gets parnasa because he keeps the Torah, one guy doesn't. So that's the lesson of Pesach. Two houses, a Jew is right next to an Egyptian. Right? So in Eretz Yisrael, where Hashem specifically will see in Chutz La'aretz, sometimes the Rishon will prosper in whatever it is. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's very, very targeted that the mitzvos will give a person some type of hatzlacha. And therefore, that's the lesson of Pesach, that rain will go on the person who keeps the Torah, rain will not go on the person who doesn't keep the Torah. Okay. Now, the next, and I'm going to do Mara first.
Let me answer the question. This question is, what's the eternal message?
No, the eternal message, yeah, the eternal message is that in Eretz Yisrael, there is a special Hashgacha Pratis in which the life of a Jew in Eretz Yisrael is not based on nature and it's not based on normal things, but there's a special segula that Hashem differentiates between those who keep the Torah and those who do not. You know, you may remember, now again, I mean, obviously, this doesn't answer some kashas we have, because obviously there are people who keep Torah that are poor and suffering, so we can't explain all the Darkei Hashgacha, but it is true, the more you live in Eretz Yisrael, the more you see the unique Hashgacha Pratis. You know, years ago when there was the Gulf War, and there were Scud missiles, Iraq was sending missiles into Israel, and none of the missiles exploded. They landed on top of shoals, on top of Bate Medrash. You know, nothing exploded. There was only, I believe, I don't remember all that, I think there was only one casualty of a guy who was making fun of the Haredim and everything else, and he was being Michal Shabbos, and the missile cut him down. One prisoner died. The only one prisoner died in this. And there were many, many missiles, like 30, 40, 50 missiles. And they didn't even explode. They were all duds. Except Badavka. So you see, in Eretz Yisrael, you see such a world in which there's a unique Hashgacha Pratis for that. Now, let me do Maror first, because Maror is a relatively simple idea. We are Mechuyev to eat Maror in order to remember the bitterness of the slavery that we faced. And why is that important? Because once again, remember that when a person is a Ben Chayrin, the Torah warns us again and again that there's a certain sin of pride, of arrogance, of Kochi v'yotzim yadi. It is my strength and my ability that has given me success. It's an interesting thing. You might figure that the better a person's life, the more grateful they would be to God. And yet the Torah is made exactly the opposite. As we get rich and powerful and prosperous, that's when we forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we are mechuyev to remember on the night of our greatest triumphs and victories, we're mechuyev to remember the bitterness of slavery. And I would suggest that's for two reasons. One is to keep us humble and grateful to Hashem, to negate the attitude of Kochi v'yotzem yadi. That is reason number one. And reason number two is that remembering our suffering is the source of the rachamim and compassion that we have for other people who suffer. So the Torah is making a point that bedavka in your cheiros, you are mechuyev to remember your avdus. So these are really the two ideas of Moror. Let me remind you that technically Moror Bisman Hazeh is a rabbinic law, because the only reference to Moror is in connection with the Korban Pesach. So when there's no Korban Pesach, Maror is the Rabbanan, but still the meaning of Maror, the central meaning of Maror, is still there. In fact, it's an interesting question. You could ask Akasha, when Rabbi Gamliel says, you got to explain three things or you're not Yotze, I mean, does he mean, if I don't explain Pesach and Maror, I'm not Yotze, even though the mitzvah of Pesach and Maror itself is only Drabanan? That's a possibility. The mitzvah is Drabanan, but the need to explain it might still be D'oraisa. It's an interesting question. How do you apply Rabbi Gamliel's teaching on a D'oraisa level to the commandments that are only Midrabanan?
After that, because the only way to be Yotze these days is Pesach.
You might say it's even more important. Yeah, you might argue it's even more important. That would suggest that maybe the matzah thing is less important because you eat the matzah. I hear. Okay, so that's the idea of Maror. Now, we'll talk about Maror. We'll get to it. Obviously, one of the questions you might raise is, the typical Maror that people eat today. Now, if you're an old-fashioned horseradish person, so you're getting Maror. You eat romaine lettuce. Some even say iceberg lettuce, as Ryan Cutler used to say. That's hardly, Mariris. But the Torah had Rachmanis on us. The Torah does not require. But the one requirement for Maror, and this is why horseradish is a bit of a shaila, is it has to be techilaso matuk v'sofo mar. It has to begin with a certain sweetness and then become bitter, because that is perech. Perech means the Egyptians enticed us with sweet words and then turned against us. Now, even with horseradish, right? Horseradish, it takes a little bit, even if it's a second or two, to give you a kick, right? So initially, countless generations, particularly of children, have taken that first horseradish and said, not so bad, then all of a sudden it hits them. But again, let me just remind you of Lahalacha. Lahalacha is very, very important that Maror cannot be cooked. Now, Charein, jarred horseradish, with beets or without beets, even if it's the plain horseradish, is absolutely not kosher for the mitzvah of Maror, because it has been cooked. So that's very, very important. A lot of people may not know that, and they use, even if it's kosher lePesach, they may use bottled horseradish, and no good at all. It has to be grated horseradish. Now, there is a chumrah of the nesivus, which some say is pikuach nefesh, that even if you're using horseradish, it cannot be ground at all. It has to be whole pieces. You cut it into pieces and you eat it. Because he says, once it's ground up, the bracha is no longer berei pri hadama, and maror has to be something upon which you make berei pri hadama. So the Nesiva says, you have to chew a kezias of whole pieces of horseradish. Some poskim say that is treated as pikuach nefesh mamish, and you're not mechoyev. So the Velt is somech on grating the horseradish, to be sure, and even exposing it to air a little bit to make it a little less strong. But still, that is only a fresh grating of the horseradish root. You are not yotze with bottled horseradish.
Can you do that on? You're saying you do it just before the evening?
Yeah, you do it before. Especially this year, Shabbos. But you have to grate it beforehand.
Is there any merit to mixing?
Same. Mixing what?
Doing both Maror.
Some people mix because they want to have the strength of the bitterness. That may be an Indian like that. But halachically, the lettuce is perfectly good. The main problem with romaine lettuce always is checking it for bugs. That's always a problem the whole year. But if you use the stalks, the bugs are on the leaves. The white stalks really are bug-free, or very easy to check because it's a clear white thing. So some people tear off the leaves and they eat their kezias of stalks. And that way you don't have a bug problem. Somebody was saying, and it was an interesting story, that he was a person who was very much into health food. And he was invited to a Hasidic Seder, Hasidic Pesach. And he was very, very worried because all of the food was, whatever it is, high fat and everything else. So finally they bring in, he says, these beautiful heads of romaine lettuce. And he says, Baruch Hashem, some healthy green salad. And then they told him, separate the stalks from the leaves. So he said, oh, that's good. So we're going to separate the stalks and throw away these hard stalks. and we'll have beautiful leaves of lettuce. So after he spends an hour separating the stalks from the leaves, the Balabai says, okay, throw away the leaves. it's the stalks that we're going to eat. You know, and then, yeah, some people do that because of the bugs. But okay. All right, so the main thing I want to talk about tonight is really the hardest one of all. Very, very, very difficult. And that is the story of what is the significance of matzah. Now, how do we understand the story of matzah? How do we normally understand it? We understand it this way. It was the morning after the night of the Korban Pesach. It was the crack of dawn. And we wanted to bake bread for our trip. It's the first day of Pesach. And when you make bread, you mix flour and water. And then the dough rises after a while, and that's called fermentation, which is chametz. But what happened was the Egyptians came, or Hashem came, it's really both, and said, you must leave right now. You cannot wait. So we didn't have time to let our dough rise, so we had to bake it immediately as matzah, because we were not, this is the story that you hear, because we weren't able to let our dough rise. Whether it's because of the Egyptians forcing us, or whether it's because, as the Arizal says, we are in the 49th level of impurity, and Hashem says, you must leave this second. So consequently, matzah reminds us of the chipazon. Chipazon is the rush by which we left Mitzrayim. And that is what Rabban Gamliel seems to say. Al shum shloi hispik betsekem shalavaseinu lahachmitz. There was not enough time for the dough of our forefathers to rise. Ad sheniklo aleihem melech malchei hamlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, until Hashem said the morning of Pesach, and said, you gotta leave. So this is the simple meaning. When I eat the matzah, it reminds me of chipazon, the hurriedness by which we left Mitzrayim. Matzah is zecher l'chipazon. Now one kasha you might ask, one simple question you might ask is, why is it so important to remember chipazon? I understand why it's important to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, but why is it important, right? I eat the matzah to be reminded of the hurriedness by which we left Mitzrayim. Zecher l'chipazon. And indeed, for some reason, Rabbi Gamliel does not quote a pasuk in Riei that says, you shivas yomim tocho matzas lechemoni ki b'chipazon yatzasa me'eretz Mitzrayim. So the Torah says directly, matzah is zecher l'chipazon. Why is chipazon important? So the simplest meaning is, chipazon is important because this tells me the chasdei hamakim, the chesed of God. Because we should have been in Mitzrayim 400 years. And if God would have said, hey, I already decreed you're supposed to be there 400 years, if you're going to disappear before that point, that's not my problem. My commitment is 400 years. And yet, Hashem in his rachamim and his love for both us and the avos said, I will take you out. Chipazon means before you're ready. Before you're ready, even though it's beyond the letter of the law. So chipazon reminds us of Hashem's rachamim. But the Netziv adds, chipazon also reminds a person that sometimes in avodas Hashem, you have to be ready to make decisions immediately. Sometimes, you know, waiting can destroy your chances. Okay, so this is chipazon. Now, let me remind you of another thing. The Ramban points out that matzah actually has two different reasons. Matzah is lechem oni. It is the bread of affliction. It is the bread that was given to slaves because it sticks in your stomach a long time. So masters don't have to give you a lot of bread. Right, just a little bit of matzah is very filling. So the Ramban points out, matzah has two symbolisms. Matzah is like maror, that it's a zecher li'avdus, and matzah is the reminder of geula because it's a zecher l'chipazon. And indeed, the Seder itself brackets this. Because at the beginning of the Seder, of Magid, what did we say? Ha lachma anya diachalu afasana. This is the bread of affliction, the bread of poverty that our forefathers ate. And at the end of Magid, this is the bread of chipazon, the bread of redemption, the bread of geula. In a sense, the whole Magid is the journey from slavery to freedom. So we begin the Magid by emphasizing the matzah of slavery, and we end the Magid by emphasizing the matzah of geula. You have gone from avdus to chayrus. Right, all of this is the general idea. But here is the Rishayim, in their halachic analysis, have enormous difficulties with the story, with the basic story that, you know, a first grader hears, a kindergartner hears. This is the story as we envision it. They wanted to bake chametz, and they didn't have a chance to bake chametz because Paro or Hashem said, you have to get out. Problem is, in Shmos Perek Yud Beis, which was given to them Rosh Chodesh Nisan, 2 weeks before Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem commanded them, you shall not eat chametz, and not only for 7 days, nor are you allowed to own chametz, right? The Yisra Bal Yerah Bal Yematzeh for 7 days. And in addition, Leil Seder, the night before they left, there is a mitzvah to eat matzah, the Erev Tochel Matzahs. So how can I say, there's really two kashas here, there are really two different kashas. Kasha number one is, how can I say that the reason we eat matzah at the Seder is to commemorate the fact that we left Mitzrayim in a hurry and we didn't have time for our dough to rise? They ate matzah the night before. In other words, if somebody would ask his father the night before, why are we eating matzah tonight? So what is the father supposed to say? Because tomorrow morning, he didn't know that yet. So question number one is, how can matzah be based on there was no time for the dough to rise? They were commanded to eat matzah before. Now that's kasha number one. But kasha number one is actually not such a strong kasha. Because you can say that Hashem gave mitzvos based on reasons that didn't materialize until later. Meaning, Abba's answer would have been, night number one, we're eating matzah. Well, either he could have said, as the Ramban says, that the matzah that was eaten the first Seder was only to re-experience the slavery once more. Although you might ask, why do they have to re-experience it? But the same way they ate maror, they ate matzah. Which means, the matzah of the first Seder was only lechem oni. And the additional reason of chipazon only materialized the next morning, and therefore that became the reason for matzah in the future. Which means we eat matzah for two reasons. We eat matzah for lechem oni and for the remembrance of chipazon. The first year they ate matzah was only for lechem oni. So there are two answers. In other words, either they were given the mitzvah of matzah based on a future reason that didn't materialize yet, or they ate matzah only because of the symbolism of lechem oni. So that kasha is not such a strong kasha. But what is a kasha is that given the fact that they already were commanded not just to eat matzah, but they were commanded not to have chametz and not to eat chametz for 7 days, that destroys the reason now, because the reason is no longer a true reason. You know, the reason is we didn't have time to let our dough rise. What do you mean you didn't have time to let your dough rise? You had to make it matzah. Let's say Hashem would have said, you got the whole day. You can leave at 6 p.m. tonight. Plenty of time to make bread. we would have had to make it matzah. So how can you say the reason why we eat matzah and don't have chametz is to remind us that we didn't have time to stay in Mitzrayim? Even if he had time, there already was a commandment 2 weeks before. Meaning the whole reason has been knocked out. You see, you understand the point I'm making? The fact that we were eating matzah the night before, that itself wouldn't bother me that much. Because that's either lechem oni, or Hashem gave us a mitzvah to commemorate what's going to happen tomorrow. Even though we didn't know that yet. But, in light of the Isser of Chametz, nothing happened the next day that connects it to the chipazon. Matzah is not a sign of chipazon if you had to have matzah, even if it wouldn't be b'chipazon. How does looking at the matzah remind me that we had to rush, since even if we didn't have to rush, it would have to be matzah? So here, this is the Ran's kasha. The Ran asks the kasha in Arvei Pesachim, and the Ran gives the following teretz, but it's only a teretz according to Rav Yossi. Which means it is a machlokas in the Gemara, but the Ran wants to explain the story according to Rav Yossi. Apparently he paskens like Rav Yossi, and he says the following. Rav Yossi is mechalek between the Isser of Chametz, Pesach Mitzrayim, the first Pesach in Mitzrayim, and the Isser of Chametz that would apply in the future. And he says, Pesach Mitzrayim, there was only an Isser to eat Chametz on the first day of Pesach. I'll show you how you know that. Yom Echad. Right? There was no Isser of eating Chametz the other days of Pesach. And number two, even on the first day of Pesach, there was only an Isser to eat Chametz. There was no Isser to own Chametz. And it is only in future years that the Isser of Chametz was extended for 7 days. And not only are you not allowed to eat, but you're not allowed to possess. So Memela, this is what the Ran says. Based on the halachos that they were given, they were permitted, remember, they were baking bread for the trip, not just for the immediate day. They would have been allowed to bake chametz, not to eat that day, but they could bake chametz to be able to eat the second day, the third day, the fourth day. So had there not been a chipazon, they would have baked chametz the morning of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and there's no Isser of Bal Yerah, there's no Isser of owning that chametz, right? So it turns out like this. So it turns out that the following. How do you see this from the Pesukim? Let me show you how you see it from the Pesukim, because if you read the Pesukim, you see a gewaldige confirmation for Rav Yossi's view. This is in Parshas Bo. Pasuk Yud Beis. I'm sorry, Perek Yud Beis. Perek Yud Beis starts off with all the laws of the Korban Pesach. So we can go through that fairly quickly. It does say in Pasuk Ches, you shall eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror. As I say, that itself is not so problematical because that could be lechem oni, etc. Now when does it introduce the Isser of Chametz? So it says, after it describes the Korban Pesach, look at Pasuk Yud Dalet. V'hoya hayom hazeh lachem l'zikaron. This day shall be a day of remembrance. V'chagosem oso chag l'ashem l'doro seichem. It shall be an eternal holiday for all of your generations. Shivas yomim matzos tochelu. For 7 days you shall eat matzah. So Rav Yossi's diuk is the following. In Mitzrayim itself, they were not commanded that for the 7 days of Pesach they can't eat chametz. It is only when Hashem says, this day will be an eternal chag, you won't eat chametz for 7 days. Now, this was based on a reason that didn't materialize till the next day. So here's what happened. When we left Mitzrayim, we already knew that we have to eat matzah tonight, or before we left, right? And we already know we're not allowed to have chametz that day. Actually, I didn't give you a pasuk for that. We are also told that starting next year, we're not going to eat chametz for 7 days. This year, that doesn't apply. Now, if you would ask me on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, I'm a regular Yid, why aren't we allowed to eat chametz for 7 days next year? What's going to happen next year that's going to change the halacha? Moshe would answer, you'll see tomorrow morning. meaning, since halachically we were allowed to bake chametz for the next day, but we couldn't do it because of chipazay, as a zecher l'chipazay, Hashem said, for 7 days, don't eat chametz. You understand? It's a bit of a complicated story. But like Rav Yossi, the Ran says, it fits very, very beautifully, because it is only l'dayrei seichem. So now, it turns out the following. It turns out, there's a problem, because there's another Mandi Amar in the Gemara that says the Isser of Chametz was 7 days from the start, and then you have a real problem. How is Maaseh Zecher L'Chipazon? And I'll give you a pshat for that. But the pashtus of the story that we have all heard, is based on Rav Yossi Shita. The Ran explains it. So based on this, it turns out the following. The very first Maaseh that was eaten at the very first Seder was not connected to Chipazon, because that didn't happen yet. It was connected to Lechem Omi. But the matzah that we eat at the Seder now has a double meaning. It is still a remez to Lechem Omi, but it is also a zecher to the Chipazon that disabled us from baking chametz in order to have it the next day. Which means matzah is a double symbol. In fact, some of the Mefarshim say that's why when Rabbi Gamliel introduces chipazon here, it says matzah zu sha'anu ochlim al shema. Why do we eat the matzah? Because why they ate the matzah in Mitzrayim was for a different reason. And therefore, you can even interpret Ha lachma anya, this is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate. You could actually translate it, not that our forefathers ate when they were slaves, but that our forefathers ate at their Seder. They ate it because it was lechem oni. We eat it because of chipazon and geula. But you see how this works only like Rav Yossi. This does not work like the opinion that Pesach Mitzrayim had the Isser of chametz all 7 days. Yeah.
So back the very first Pesach, they were able to eat lechem oni on Erev Pesach, right? But today we can't.
On Erev Pesach?
Erev Pesach.
Yeah. How do you know that? Why do you say that?
You just said it.
No. The first Seder, that was the night of Pesach.
Yeah, but he said the whole week before they were eating it zecher or to as slaves, so they're eating lechem oni.
Well, they were not eating it as a mitzvah. They were eating it because that's what the Egyptians were giving them. But at that point they weren't slaves anymore. So at that point they probably had regular bread. In other words, lechem oni just meant when they were slaves, that's what the Egyptians fed them. But remember, by this time they were not slaves. They stopped being slaves Rosh Hashanah, 6 months before. So they were not eating matzah that week before. But anyway, but even so, I mean, the issue of eating matzah...
Are they going to eat it? Yeah, I don't know why they want to.
Yeah, they could. Yeah. The issur of eating matzah erev Pesach is a rabbinic prohibition. It's not a Torah law at all. Uh-huh. Just so the taste of matzah should be fresh. So, in fact, not everybody even holds it to such a halacha. I mean, we paskin there is, but there are poskim who allow you to eat matzah erev Pesach. This is not a doraisa, so certainly at that time they could have eaten matzah if they wanted. Okay. So now let me tell you an interesting chiddush of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And that is the following. He wants to say this. You know, we know that the mitzvah, the obligation of eating matzah, is only the first night, or in Chutz La'aretz, the first 2 nights. There is no chiyuv to eat matzah. When the Torah says for 7 days you eat matzah, That doesn't mean you have to eat matzah. It means you're not allowed to eat hummus. You can only eat unleavened bread and not leavened bread. Nevertheless, there's a teaching of the Vilna Gaon that one should follow, that even though you're not mechuyav to eat matzah, but every kezias of matzah you eat during Pesach, you do fulfill a mitzvah of shivas yamim tochai. For 7 days, you shall eat matzah. This is shmur matzah, either hands or machine, shmur matzah. Therefore, it's advisable, if you can, this is halacha l'maisa, that one should try to have shmur matzah every day of Pesach. Now, I'm not saying only eat shmur matzah, although some people do that, but even if you're eating regular kosher Pesach matzah, that's fine, but try to have a kezias of shmur matzah every day. That way you have a mitzvah. So here's what your Rabbi Kamenetsky says.
Why the goal is only shmur matzah would be the mitzvah of each kezias.
Yeah, because he says that it has to be the matzah's mitzvah, meaning just like the matzah of Leil Pesach requires that it be specifically harvested. L'shem mitzvah, that would apply to this mitzvah as well. Now, we know the following. Because matzah is called lechem oni, the bread of affliction, that is why... let me talk about egg matzah for a moment. There's a product out in the market that's called egg matzah, or matzah ashira, rich matzah. And this is matzah that is made with egg yolk, or with wine, or with chocolate, or with sugar. It's matzah ashira, rich matzah. Now, what is the status of rich matzah, so to speak? So this is a big machlokas among Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. It's based on machlokas, the Beis Yosef and the Ramah, goes going back to the Rishonim. Sfaradim have it very simple. Sfaradim say, matzah ashira is totally mutter on Pesach. Absolutely mutter on Pesach. But the only thing is, you're not yosei leil seder with matzah ashira, because the Torah says matzah has to be the bread of affliction. Right, the Gemara says, lechem oni excludes matzah ashira. Okay, so you're not yotzei with egg matzah. Now, so according to Sfaradim, it's absolutely kosher l'Pesach, but you're not yotzei matzah's mitzvah. The Ramah brings a chumrah that Ashkenazim keep, that we're noyeg not to eat matzah ashira at all during Pesach, because there was some fear that the fruit juice or the egg yolk may accelerate fermentation, so that even normally when you make matzah, if you do it within 18 minutes, you're fine, but we're afraid that the peiros may cause an acceleration of chimutz. So among Ashkenazim, you don't eat it. It is mutter, however, for ketanim to eat. You're allowed to own it. A katan could eat it, and a chole, zakein or a chole, could eat it, but not at the Seder, still not at the Seder, because you have two halachas. At the Seder, you're not yotzei, because it got to be lechem only, but Ashkenazim only permit it to be eaten at all for chola v'zakeh. So this was a funny thing. You know, for many, many years, the big matzah companies in the United States, most of them are closed now. Horowitz Margaretten, I think, is now closed. Streitz is closed. What's the other one? The third one is Manischewitz is still there, I think. Yeah. So when they did egg matzah for many years, they put on the side in Hebrew, Ayin Ramah, Simon Tuf Ayin Beis, Hebrew letters. Now, if you open up the Ramah, it says, "Do not eat this product." They didn't want to put it in English because it basically says, "Don't buy this." It's like cigarettes, right? Don't you dare buy these cigarettes, because you'll get cancer and the like. So not only did they do it in Hebrew, but they only gave you a marem makom. They didn't even tell you what it said in Hebrew. So as a result, many people see extra Hebrew letters. They think it's glatt kosher matzah or something. You know, it's extra. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, when he was the Rav Hamachshir of Streitz, he made them put in English, "This product may only be consumed by the elderly or children." And I think now they do that now. It became a kibbutz that that's the appropriate thing to do. Now, okay, but even among Ashkenazim, many poskim didn't agree with this. The Maharal, for example, strongly disagreed. He was before the Ramah, but he disagreed with the Chorman. He said, there is absolutely no reason why matzah ashira should not be mutter on Pesach, because the Gemara excludes it only from Leil Seder, because it's a chisaron of lechem only. Okay. So now, let me tell you what the Vilna Gaon says, although this word of the Gra will only fit Sfardim. And that is the following. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky wants to say that lechem oni is only the reason, a reason at the Seder itself. Meaning, since the first Seder was before the Chipazon miracle. So the primary significance at the Seder, the first Seder, was only a commemoration of lechem oni. So even though the motif of chipazon was added for future years, you still have to have the lechem oni at the Seder, and that's why matzah ashira is no good. But with respect to eating matzah the rest of the week, that was only because of chipazon. You see this? In other words, if you look at matzah as a reminder of the speed by which we left Mitzrayim, matzah ashira is just as good as lechem oni. It's the same thing. It's unleavened, which shows us the haste we had to leave Mitzrayim. So says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, if the matzah the rest of the week is only a zecher lechipazai, matzah ashira would be maspik. And therefore he wants to say the din that you can't use lechem oni for matzah mitzvah is only the matzah mitzvah of Leil Seder. It is not the matzah mitzvah of the rest of the week. But as I say, this will only work according to Sfardim, because Ashkenazim hold you don't eat matzah shira the rest of the week. So it's just a theoretical extension of the Vilna Gaon to the minhag of Sfardim. That's kind of an unusual mixture that allow you to eat matzah shira. The other problem is this, though. This is where this almost renders Rav Yaakov impossible. Because if you're going to tell me you're only mekayim the mitzvah of the Vilna Gaon with matzah shmura, where on earth are you going to find matzah ashira that was made l'shem mitzvah? In other words, you're not going to find egg matzah that is shmura. So it's not clear that this would have any practical. Maybe it's right from Rav Yaakov. Not like I said. Maybe you don't need shmura for that purpose. Yeah.
Is there something for a chole that would be acceptable by the person?
Yes. Again, a chola cannot use egg matzah for the first night at all. But what he can do is, he can have matzah meal and drink it down with water. So what can happen is, you can grind the matzah into particles, and he could take a spoonful, and again, he should take as little as he needs to take. You know, he doesn't have to be machmer in the shiurim, and he can drink it with water. He cannot drink it with juice or anything, because that introduces another taste. But the water, he can drink it, and that hopefully will make it easier. Yeah.
In theory, if you could bake the egg matzah in like 2 minutes, then Ashkenazim would be able to eat it.
Well, it seems the Ramah says we're choshesh that there's immediate chametz. He just says. Now again, avadei it's an inconsistent minhag, because if you're really choshesh it's chametz, how can you give it to a zaken or a chola, and how are you allowed to own it, keep it in your house? So obviously, it's a chumrah. It's not really based on a real fear, but it is a chumrah. Now let me just mention. All right, so this is a complicated thing. So matzah is a complicated story. Matzah cheirus avdus. Could they have baked chametz, right, etc.? The difference between the rest of Pesach and the first night, and the difference between the first night at the first Seder and the Pesach night in all future years, right? So it's a complicated thing. But let me just mention that we still have to answer one question, and that is, okay, at least we got the story down, according to Rav Yossi, that says the Isser of Chametz in Mitzrayim was only the first day, and it didn't include the Isser of possession of Chametz. Good. But, like the Chachamim say, they already were commanded 2 weeks before Pesach that you're not allowed to have Chametz. Not allowed to eat Chametz, and not allowed to have Chametz, own Chametz, for 7 days. So, in other words, they don't limit that to the future years. So, how do you understand the story? So the next morning, the reason why we baked it matzah was not because we were kicked out. We had to bake it matzah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not allowed to have chametz. Not allowed to eat chametz and not allowed to own chametz. So how is it connected to being kicked out? So here's what the Abarbanel says, and this is a totally different understanding of the story. He says, yes, when we got up in the morning to bake our bread, we planned on making it matzah, because it had to be matzah. And even if we were given the whole day, it would have been matzah. But what happened was, we were kicked out of Mitzrayim before we baked our bread at all. Remember, the Pasuk actually says, we left Mitzrayim with dough. See, the way we commonly understand the story, we understand that we left Mitzrayim with matzah because we were in a rush. We had to bake it before it rose. Right? The normal understanding of the story is we left with matzah. But the Barbanel says, literally the Pasuk says, we left with unbaked dough. And the chipazon is the miracle that Hashem took us to the next stop, which was Sukkos, so quickly that the dough did not rise in that trip. Totally different. Not that we didn't have time to let the dough rise in Egypt and we baked it as matzah. No. There was a miracle here. There's actually a miracle. See, the other way, there was no miracle. Just we didn't have time, so it reminds me that we were kicked out. This is a miracle. The miracle was, we left Mitzrayim with dough that was not allowed to become chametz. And the chipazon, which is an amazing thing, of 600,000, 3 million people really, getting to the next step, and the dough didn't rise, because Hashem somehow transported us there so quickly. So the Abarbanel says, according to the Tanakhama, the Chachamim, the chipazon was not how we left Ramses, but how we got to Sukkos. Different chipazon, not the chipazon of get out of here, but the chipazon, once we're out, we travel so quickly. You see? So, and therefore the Abarbanel says, that's the miracle. The miracle was that the Eibishter enabled us to keep his halacha in spite of the fact that we had to leave with unbaked dough. Very, very, that's a very, very different version of the story. But, I have to say, the Abarbanel is very meduyak because it says they took dough out of Mitzrayim. Like the other version of the story, they took matzah out of Mitzrayim. So you see, according to the first version, there was no miracle in the chipazon. I mean, there was no miracle in the matzah. It simply means, since we were kicked out so quickly, we had to bake it as matzah. Like the second version, chipazon itself was a miracle that it didn't become chametz on the trip from Ramses to Sukkos when we finally had ovens where we could bake the dough. Yeah.
Is there any credence to the idea that the sun baked it because we were forced out?
Yeah.
It wasn't. Yeah. It was on our meeting board and the sun baked it.
Yes. The Ramban actually says that. The Ramban actually learns we left with dough and the sun baked it. And still, that was treated as a miracle that it didn't become chametz. In other words, like the Abarbanel, it's not that we deliberately stopped it from becoming chametz. There was a miracle it didn't become chametz because of the mehiras of our travel, right? So this is matzah. So it's a complicated thing. You want to explain things to young children, obviously, and then things get so complicated that how do you explain things? And one of the things I think you discover is that things that were simple to you at a younger age get more confusing when you get older, which is a little disconcerting. You know, you figure things should get clearer to you when you get older, but they actually get more confusing. But this is the yisod of matzah. And the bottom line, once again, is that matzah is both a siman of poverty and slavery and a siman of redemption and chipazon. Yeah.
according to Mandalamar, who says that it's a necessary even in that first year to possess it.
Even to possess
how,
it.
How is the kingdom that they had and the things like this that they were able to...
So here you have to understand something. This is true even today. There is no iser of owning chametz deka kelim because the Torah prohibits owning visible chametz. So chametz that's absorbed in a kli, which if I cook with it will impart a kind of food, there is no iser of possession. In fact, if I have chametz deka kelim and they're clean, I can just close them off and not use them, and I don't have to sell them to a guy. In fact, even halachically, there are reasons why you shouldn't sell utensils to a guy, because after Pesach you may have to be tov on them because you're buying them from a guy. But even without that consideration, even if I don't mind being tov on them, there is no reason. You are allowed to own chametz deka kelim, but you wouldn't be allowed to use them. Now the interesting question is, you're asking, so if they wanted to cook or bake with their chametz deka kelim, would they have to kasher them? Because it's interesting, the mitzvah of kashering was not given until the 40th year in the desert. So there's an interesting question, what was the halacha of kashering vessels before that mitzvah was given? That's an interesting question. It could very well be that doraisa, until the mitzvah was given, the taste that's absorbed in a vessel was not considered to be halachically significant. Yeah. So let me just finish a little quickly. After this, after Rabban Gamliel, we then have what I think I mentioned before was considered to be the most important sentence in the Haggadah, and the Brisker Rav said it is the hardest of all mitzvahs. In every generation, each person must regard themselves as if they were personally taken out of Mitzrayim. And I had mentioned to you, I think, the first night, the Baal HaTanya's pshat, that Mitzrayim refers to the inner blockages and constrictions, Meitzar, Mina Meitzar, from the narrow place, that Yetzias Mitzrayim is so important because it put into the world the koach to be liberated from everything that enslaves you. Our arrogance, our gaiva, our selfishness, our hedonism, our materialism, our lack of self-esteem, our inability to connect to Hashem and to connect to each other. These are blockages, these are slaveries. And Leil Pesach, Hashem puts into the world a koach where you become liberated, or you can become liberated. Can, it doesn't mean you will, because remember, not every Jew left Mitzrayim. And just like most Jews didn't leave Mitzrayim, and just as most Jews didn't leave Mitzrayim, most Jews may not leave our Mitzrayim either. But the potential is there, the gift is there. Grab onto that gift, that Hashem will take you out of your Mitzrayim as he took our forefathers out of their Mitzrayim. So this is what the Baal HaTanya says. Very important you say. At this point, we have finished the Maggid, and we now begin another mitzvah. And the other mitzvah is the recitation of Hallel, Leil Pesach. Okay, so although it's still within Maggid, now, the recitation of Hallel Leil Pesach is a mitzvah d'Rabbanan. But the Hallel that is recited Leil Pesach is a very, very unusual Hallel in a lot of different ways. First and foremost, it is split into two unequal halves. Because before the meal, before the second cup, we only recite the first two paragraphs of Hallel. Hallelu Abdei Hashem and B'Seis Yisrael Mimitzrayim. The rest of Hallel we recite after benching. This is the only Hallel that is split in this way. Hallel, you're not allowed to be mafsik normally. And yet here we have a huge, huge hefsik. That's difference number one. Difference number two, Hallel is normally Ba'amida. We stand up for Hallel. Here, it is actually supposed to be yeshiva. Difference number three, there is no bracha rishona. Right? When you, before you make challah, we make a bracha. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav b'tzivanu. We say likro es ha-halel. Many rishonim have the gear, so ligmor es ha-halel. But whatever it is, why is there no bracha rishona for halel leil seder? Now it's interesting. According to Maseches Sofrim, which is really from the Gaonim, it's a Maseches Sofrim, it has a compendium of many different minhagim. The reason why we don't recite a bracha b'leil seder is because we already said a bracha on halel in shul. Now you may know, maybe you've heard it, seen it, that many svardim, many chassidim have a minhag that the first night of Pesach they actually recite halel in shul. Have you ever seen that, ever done that? Many people say it's a very beautiful, very moving halal at night. That's the other thing, halal at night. There's only halal at night also. And they do it in shul. And they have a very excellent marker for this, because Maseches Sofrim says the reason we don't say a bracha in the Seder recitation is because we already said the bracha in Beis Knesset. Now that would imply, would it not, that if you don't say Hallel b'Beis Knesset, you would say the bracha in the Seder. And yet, as we know, the minhag is, the halacha is, we don't recite the bracha even if you don't say Hallel in the Beis Knesset. So the Ran brings, on the question of bracha, the Ran brings the name of Rav Haigon, the following formulation. We don't say a bracha leil seder of likro et ha-halel, and this is Rav Haigon's lashon. She'ein anu korin b'toras kriya. We don't recite the halel as a recitation. We recite the halel as a shir, as a song. And the bracha of halel is only on the halel of kriya. It is not on the halel of Shira. This is what Rav Haigon says. This is what the Ran brings in Arvei Pesachim. So the problem is, what does that mean? What is the halel of Kriya and what is the halel of Shira? Singing, I mean, you can sing halel and shol too, whatever it is. So The normal explanation that is given for Rav Haigon is the following. It is actually connected to what we just read. That is, Hallel as a Kriya is when I remember the Chaste Hamakam of the past and I express my gratitude. Hallel of Shira is when you actually experience Hashem redeeming you. So for example, imagine the Hallel that the Jewish people said when they left Mitzrayim. They didn't preface it with a bracha. It was spontaneous. Thank you, Hashem. So since Leil Yetzias Mitzrayim is the Hallel of experience, not the Hallel of remembering, spontaneous experience is a song of thanksgiving. It does not have a bracha. The thanks comes from the heart. Right? That's the meaning of Rav Haigon. So according to that, the absence of a bracha is directly connected to the preceding idea that each person must experience. Yeah.
Doesn't that go against the idea of breaking it up, though?
Yeah, so why do you break it up?
Yes.
So the Nitziv adds the idea that the lesson of breaking it up, the message is, that even the meal is part of the gratitude. That Judaism does not look at Shulchan Aruch Oreich as a break, but it's part of our celebration of gratitude to Hashem. So it's all one hamshacha of hakaras hatov. Okay, so that's the first two chapters of the Hallel. I'll have more to say maybe tomorrow. We'll have one more share. But let me just say, afterwards, after the two chapters of Hallel, we have a final bracha before the second cup, which talks about Hashem redeeming us, redeeming our forefathers, etc. Oh, I'm sorry. Before I say that, one other point. Before we started Hallel, look before we started Hallel. So we said the following phrase: the Nomar Lefanav, we shall now recite before Hashem a Shira Chadasha, a new song. And the new song is because we're not just thanking Hashem for the past, which would have been an old song, but Shira Chadasha, we are experiencing a new redemption. Shira Chadasha. But now I want to show you a very interesting deal. So after we say the first two chapters of Hallel, we then have a bracha which ends, Goal Yisrael, God redeems the Jewish people. You have redeemed us, you have redeemed our forefathers, you brought us to this night to eat matzah and maror. May you bring us to other Yamim Tovim. May we eat from the Zvat Korbanos and the Korban Pesach. And then it says like this, V'nodeh l'cha, and then we will give thanks to you with a shir chadash, a new song, al geulasenu, on our redemption, which is our physical redemption, the al pedus nafshenu, and the redemption of our neshama. Goal Yisrael, second time. So, for those of you that are grammarians here, you may ask Akasha, why, when we introduced the Hallel, we called it a Shira Chadasha, which is feminine. And then when we talk about Mashiach coming, we say, you know, when the Geula comes, we will give Hashem Shir Chadash. Now, Shira Chadasha and Shir Chadash mean the same thing in English, but one is Lashon Zachar, one is Lashon Nekeva. Why is there the switching from Shira Chadasha to Shir Chadash? So Tosfos in Arvei Pesachim actually gives us an answer. He brings a medrash that says, in Olam Hazeh, all of our songs of redemption are feminine. Because just as when a woman gives birth, there is pain both before and after, so too, all of the Chasdei Hashem in this world are still accompanied with certain pain and dislocation. So it's like a nekeva. Our song is like the gratitude a woman has after childbirth. Very grateful, but it still hurts. But the geula of the Mashiach, although beforehand there will be pains of Mashiach, but once the geula comes, no pain, no suffering. We will be like the man who gives birth, right? The difference between a woman who has a child and a man that fathers a child is that with the man, unless of course he's highly empathetic and identifies with his wife, the man doesn't have any tzaras, so to speak. And therefore, our shir will not be the shir of the nekeva who is so grateful but still has pain. It will be the shir of a zachar who is grateful and does not suffer that pain. And that's why Bedavka, in the passage about the Mashiach, the Geula, it'll become a Shir Chadash rather than a Shira Chadasha. Okay, and that's the chiluk in the words. And then to all Yisrael, we drink the second cup, and then we begin the eating and drinking and the like. Okay, so I think tomorrow night, if you want, we can have one more Shir for the road, so to speak. Yeah. Okay. Okay, be off. Okay.
Is there an idea that we were in the triumph, we had plenty of time really to bake, and we still have the mitzvah of matzah?
Say again?
Depending on the mandar amar, will depend on whether we were able to still bake
chametz. That's correct. That'll be the machlokes, right? Meaning if I hold that Pesach Mitzrayim, there was only an Isser of Chametz the first day, and there was no Bal Yerah, we could have baked on the first day Chametz for all the other days. And we didn't because we were kicked out and didn't have time, so the Isser of Chametz in the future was because
we were kicked out. But didn't we know that we were going to be leaving? We should have prepared.
We didn't know when. We didn't know when. So in the morning, we thought we had some time, and it turned out we didn't. So we didn't know that. We didn't know. Meaning, even though we were told Next year, no chametz for a week. But we didn't know the reason for that yet. The reason was that the next morning when we tried to make chametz, we were kicked out. We didn't know that reason. We didn't know that was going to happen.
Because Moshe Rabbeinu said to Pari, what do you think, we're going to walk out? We're going to go out in the middle of the night.
That's right. So they thought. So they thought they had time. If they did, they thought they had time. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Rav.
Yeah.
Is a woman is obligated to offer? Is it a korban or?
A woman is obligated. Yeah.
Both.